National Radio Club.
I'm Charlie Van Dyke, and you're listening to the DX Audio Service from the National Radio Club.
Hi, DXers and friends of radio everywhere. Phil Wayne here for Market Scope, a monthly glimpse of radio stations and radio markets within the worldwide reach of the National Radio Club membership. This convention issue, Rusty Curry of Springfield, Oregon, was ready to catch some free-format stunting of an FM station in his area.
This is Rusty Curry in Springfield, Oregon, with one of the strangest between-formats gimmicks I've ever heard. Saturday morning, June 22nd, I tuned to 105.9 in Portland and heard something like this.
104.
Have your boots been shunned? And whose heart did it seem? I wonder.
105.
Too much fun. What's that mean? It's like too much money. There's no such thing. It's like a girl too pretty.
106.
There's your trouble. There's your trouble. Singing double is the wrong one.
107.
Hey, we're from the country and we like it that way. Everybody knows everybody.
108.
And they were actually trying to convince their listeners that this was their shiny new format. For instance, they would say, finally, what you've always been waiting for, all the best music without all those annoying long versions. Or, research indicates that this is what the public wants. And they would have, like, 30-second commercial breaks, with each commercial being only a few seconds long. And they finally had me halfway convinced that they were actually serious about this and were going to give it a try for a while. I didn't get the idea to do this tape until quite near the end of the game. As you'll hear, they're still selling this, but they're also tipping their hands somewhat as to what they're going to do. So this is Tuesday evening, about 4:45.
1:22.
Don't close your eyes. Let it be me. Don't pretend it's him. It's some fantasy.
1:23.
Sing a song about the heart, man.
Discovered Portland's revolutionary new Quick 106.
Hey, stop by for a second.
A special announcement, 5 o'clock this afternoon.
1:24.
Crazy about a Mercury. Lord, I'm crazy about a Mercury. I'm gonna buy me a Mercury and cruise it up in my wives. The traffic jams are just something women like about a pickup man.
And now, another quick listener comment on Quick 106.
I'm just wondering what's going on with the radio station. There's weirdness and numbers, and I don't understand. And it's not very fun to listen to.
The new Quick 106.
And make sure you have that radio on this afternoon at 5 for a special announcement.
1:54.
I'm shameless. When it comes to loving you, I'll do anything you want me to.
1:55.
Yeah, this is a perfect lover doing nothing but what a perfect love does.
Smile, I'd do anything that you wanted me to.
1:83.
And we danced out there on that empty hall.
Playing the best variety of rock, country, top 40, and today's favorites. And more than 400 songs every hour. The new Quick 106.
And make sure you have that radio on this afternoon at 5 for a special announcement.
2:15.
Watch your broken dreams dancing and out of the beams of a neon moon.
2:16.
So now there's a few minutes of dead air. And here's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. We're about to sign on a brand new radio station. We're here for anyone in the Portland, Vancouver, or Salem area that really loves music. Especially music from artists who have stood the test of time and stand out above the rest. We're the new station at 105.9 FM, and we call ourselves The River. We've assembled a huge music library representing rock's legendary performers, like the Eagles, Steely Dan, Eric Clapton, Santana, U2, the Rolling Stones, Van Morrison, Bonnie Raitt, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Bruce Springsteen, Allman Brothers, and Tom Petty. We call it First Class Rock. We're dedicated to playing first class rock with a minimum of interruptions, first thing in the morning and all day long. We're really serious about that. A lot of music, not much talk, and no silly morning show. The new 105.9, The River. First Class Rock. It's a great time to be on the river.
Thanks, Rusty, for keeping us up to date on this change. You know that we're always interested in hearing the transition from old format to new format. They're sometimes fascinating to catch. If you have anything interesting in your radio market, why not send us a tape for use in Market Scope? You can reach me, Phil Wayne, at 1872 Myers Road East, Marion, Ohio 43302-9160. All the editors and membership are very thankful for your contributions. Hope to see you in Lima, Ohio for this year's convention, where there have been a number of format changes, frequency swaps, and call letter changes among all the clear channel properties all within the last week. So, the radio dial is going to be a little different in Lima this time around. Now, here are the musings from the members.
Musings from members.
Oh, there, everyone. This is Paul Blay from Brantford, Ontario. July the 30th, I do believe. First of all, I would like to give out a couple of thank yous as far as finding stuff goes. First of all, I would like to thank Dave Markhouse for that wonderful CD of KDKA. And second of all, I would also like to thank Dave Ruckmeyer from Hamilton for finding a 45 record of Vaughn Monroe, Snowy White Snow. About CHWO in Oakville, there's a new program that went on there about a month ago now with Tom Rivers on Saturday night from 7 to midnight, which you also have Prime Time Bandstand on Friday night, 7 to midnight, which also plays music from the 50s and 60s, which I could take it or leave it. But if you have a complaint about that, you can phone CHWO Monday to Friday, and their phone number is 1-416-544-0740. And if you want to talk to the program director, ask for extension 246. If you have a complaint, the way that fits into the format, I myself doesn't fit, but I'll be looking forward to hear what you guys have to say sometime down the road about that.
This is Tim Hendel, and I'm on a one-man crusade, and I'd like some of you DX Audio Service members to help me if you think that I'm right. For over 2 years now, I've been writing to National Public Radio. I am an NPR member and a very loyal NPR listener. However, I've been very disturbed because if you listen carefully on programs such as All Things Considered and Morning Edition, they no longer give a postal address where you can write. They only give an email address. Also, they don't give a phone number. If you listen to As It Happens on the CBC, they give a phone number that you can call in and give your opinion, but NPR doesn't. I've written approximately 10 letters to NPR protesting the fact that people without email access can't write to them, and I'm getting nowhere. I get a few lip service responses, but I'm basically getting nowhere. Any of you out there who are NPR members and who feel as I do, I hope you'll join in, contact your local stations, contact NPR, do whatever you can. Tell them that there are those people who can't use email, and we deserve a right to have access as well. And tell them you won't be a member anymore. That's what I've done. Programs on the conservative side, such as Focus on the Family or Jerry Falwell, they always give postal addresses as well as email. I don't want to get into an argument as to whether NPR's liberal or conservative, but I just want to say they're ignoring everybody who's not on the Internet, and I hope some of you other DX Audio Service members will join me because it's very lonely on a one-man crusade. Let's convince NPR that there's a lot of folks out there who want to write but who can't.
Hello, Fred, DXers. This is the one and only Victor speaking to you from the Schmidt House in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland. Fred, I enjoyed that article you read about stacking antennas. I wonder if I'd be able to afford something like that to improve my DXing on TV and FM. And on a side note, I was able to hook up my GE Super 3 to my outdoor rotor antenna that I already have, and it really does make a world of difference when DXing. I can zero in literally on the various transmitters as I DX.
Hello, DX Audio Service listeners and Fred. This is Debbie Caldeback from Des Moines, Iowa, and this is August 8th. And on August 6th, we were told in the news that 940 KXTK is going to be changing format. It's an all-sports station right now, and it's going to go to religion. We've had three sports stations in a town of 250,000 people, and they just weren't all able to make it.
Hi, this is Mike Lance with some great and exciting news for a change. The good news is this. On July 13th, I from Handy Ham, and I passed it. And I got my call letters. My call letters are KG4UKB. Also, in other news, 1360 WKAT will be changing, it looks like, from Spanish to classical music. So we're getting back a classical station in the Miami area.
This is Mark Dernberger in rural Minnesota, and sadly, I've been away from the last couple of copies of the DX Audio Service. But I did want to comment, if no one else has responded, to Tim Hendel's question regarding the possible use of a 50,000-watt radio station's heat exchanger, swimming pool, if you will, for bathing. And I would bet that that was not the case, because the water that was used that circulated in these big transfer tubes had to be distilled water. It had to be very pure in order to keep from contaminating the tubes themselves. And that water was generally in a closed system where it couldn't be exposed to anything that could contaminate it. So I'm sorry to tell you, Tim, I have a feeling that that story is just another part of the folklore. We had a question on the musings about whether WCCO in Minneapolis ever broadcast in a foreign language. Well, the foreign languages that I heard on that station had to do with polka music, and the Scandinavian heritage of that radio station. Do they? Was there ever a time when they broadcast regular programming in foreign languages? I don't think so. But they certainly were tuned to their heritage, which was primarily Scandinavian and German. And a lot of the programming, including the live polka bands, were directed toward those audiences. I hope that helps. I could be wrong about broadcasting in foreign languages. I'm just not aware of it. Take care, all.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Dabelstein calling from Phoenix on Sunday, August 18th. For those of you who may be interested in such things, KTAR here in Phoenix on 620 AM is now celebrating their 80th anniversary on the air. They've added to their website a number of audio clips of various news broadcasts, programs, and musical jingles that they have aired over the years. If you'd like to hear these, just go to the KTAR website at www.620ktar.com and follow the directions on the site. I hope everyone has a good time at the convention on Labor Day weekend. I actually will be just down the road in Cincinnati attending a family wedding, but unfortunately my schedule won't allow me any time to come up and stop by and see you all in Lima. Have a good time. 73s for now.
Hello, my fellow DXs. This is Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. Well, we finally have a country music station on FM in Southern Ontario, 95.3 Energy, CING, in Hamilton. Started last Monday, August the 12th, with just more or less playing music, and then this morning they kicked in with DJs at 7 o'clock. This is the 19th. The Jets games are on WABC to help Ken Onuschuk out, and I'm glad to help Ken out with anything I can, and I'm going to miss him at the convention. Also, I've been picking up some stations on 1480, Hornell, New York, and then I'd lose it about 8:45. They were broadcasting the minor league baseball team, the Hornell Dodgers, and a very good station in Ypsilanti, Michigan on 1480 that really plays good country music. I picked up one on 770 briefly last Friday night. I think it was in Nelson, Ohio. Was playing a lot of good country music, too. There's going to be an Ernie Harwell Day on September 15th in Detroit, and I think that's wonderful. I think that he is very deserving of that. And also, this Thursday, the 20th, Wayne Ryan again, there's going to be a wonderful thing also this coming Friday, the 23rd of August, on WEEI in Boston, flagship station of the Red Sox Network. They're doing a radiothon for the Jimmy Fund, which was started years ago by people like Johnny Pesky and the late Ted Williams.
And before we close out this edition of our Musings to the Members, Saul Chernos posted an article in our email list at the National Radio Club, which is about a website that is critical to Clear Channel Radio. He writes, ClearChannelSucks.org is a free speech website dedicated to educating the public about entertainment giant Clear Channel. Clear Channel owns over 1,200 radio stations and 37 television stations, with investments in 240 radio stations globally, and Clear Channel Entertainment, aka SFX, one of their more well-known subsidiaries, owns and operates over 200 venues nationwide. They are in 248 of the top 250 radio markets, controlling 60% of all rock programming. They outright own the tours of musicians like Janet Jackson, Aerosmith, Pearl Jam, Madonna, and NSYNC. They own the network, which airs Rush Limbaugh, Dr. Laura, Casey Kasem, and the Fox Sports Radio Network. With 103 million listeners in the United States of America and 1 billion globally, that's one-sixth of the world population, this powerful company has grown unchecked, using their monopoly to control the entire music industry. If you find this alarming, ClearChannelSucks.org is a place for you. And I'm sure there's websites like that about other things that have to do with radio. If you find out something interesting that you'd like to pass on to us, please just give us a call on the Musings line, 419-224-1609, 24 hours a day, or drop it on a card, letter, or send it an email to us here at the Musings Department.
Hello again, sports fans. Ken back here. And for the September issue, I have the National Football League 2000 flagship stations and other info here that I've got both from the Sporty News Preview and from the Internet. So here we go. Arizona Diamondbacks, Cardinals out of Phoenix. 1060 KDUS called the Deuce. And 100.7 KSLX with Dave Pasch and John Missler. The Atlanta Falcons on 640 WGST and 96.1 WKLS on a 35 station network in Georgia plus one South Carolina. Play-by-play Jeff Van Note and Jeff Hellinger. Baltimore Ravens on 1300 WJFK and 102.7 WQSR. Play-by-play Scott Garceau and Tom Maddie, and they're on a 21-station network in five states. Buffalo Bills 96.9 WGRF on a 17-station network in New York State, plus 590 in Toronto. The Carolina Panthers out of Charlotte on 99.7 WRFX on a 29-station network. Play-by-play by Bill Rosinski, Roman Gabriel, Jim Zoke, and Dave Langston. Chicago Bears on 780 WBBM with Jeff Joniap, Herb Arkush, and Tom Thayer. Cincinnati Bengals, a little strange situation, 1360 WCKY and 92.5 WOFX, called the Fox, on a 20-station network in three states. And after the baseball season, WLW joins the network, which is kind of useless, really. The Cleveland Browns, only info is 1100 WTAM and 100.7 WMMS on a 29-station network in Kentucky, New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. The Dallas Cowboys, the only thing they listed was 98.7 KLUV. Disappointing website. Some give you a lot, some give you nothing. The Denver Broncos, 850 KOA and a 46-station network in six states. Play-by-play, Dave Logan and Scott Hastings. And the website claims Spanish on 1030 KBNO. I dispute that. With Fernando Sergio and Frank Ponce there. I think it's on a different frequency, but I haven't checked that out. Detroit Lions. Strange. Two local stations, however. 950 WWJ, 1270 WXYT. Well, I guess one station doesn't cover, the other one will. 35-station network out there. And play-by-play by Mark Champion and Jim Brandstetter into a network that goes to Michigan and Ohio. The Green Bay Packers out of 620 WTMJ in Milwaukee and a 7-station network that covers several Midwestern states, I know that, with Wayne Larrivee and Larry McCarron, because I know on Sundays in September it is just awful trying to find a Milwaukee Brewers game because of the interest in the Packers on Sunday. The new Houston Texans will be on English 610 KILT and some network, and in Spanish 1010 KLAT. All right, the Indianapolis Colts on 1260 WNDE and 94.7 WFBQ in a 17-station network in Indiana. That's all I had. The Jacksonville Jaguars on 690 WOKV and 96.9 WKQL in an 18-station network in Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina. Play-by-play, Brian Sexton and Matt Robinson. The Kansas City Chiefs, lousy website, to say the least. They only list 101.1 KCFX in Harrisonville, Missouri, and mention announcer Mitch Holtis, so good luck. The Miami Dolphins had a lousy website, and the only thing they mentioned was 560 WQAM, nothing else. Minnesota Vikings, nice website, but again, hardly any information. They only said 1130 KFAN only, and that's it. New England Patriots out of Foxborough, Mass, on 104.1 WBCN Boston, and a 33-station network, play-by-play, Gil Santos and Gino Capoletti. New Orleans Saints, mentioned only, 870 WWL. New York Giants, mentioned 770 WABC. And the New York Jets on 660 WFAN. Oakland Raiders on 1050 KTCT out of San Mateo. And a network, of course. Philadelphia Eagles, 94.1 WISP and a 16-station network in the area. Play-by-play, Merrill Reese and Mike Quick. The Pittsburgh Steelers on 970 WBGG, called the Berg, and 102.7 WDVE. and play-by-play, Bill Hillgrove, Myron Cope, and Ton Chilkin. The St. Louis Rams, they had a lousy website, in my opinion. They only mentioned 103.3 KLOU, along with 1600 KATZ, the gospel station. San Diego Chargers gave me a rough time, too. They only mentioned 760 KFMB plus 100.7 FM. San Francisco 49ers on 810 KGO on a 26-station network in four states plus 1110 in Los Angeles, since there's no football down there. Tennessee Titans, 104.5 KWGFX in Nashville, flagship, and nothing else mentioned. The Seattle Seahawks, 710 KIRO with Brian Davis, Ron Callen, and Steve Rabel. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 99.5 WQIK with Gene Dekaroff and Scott Brantley. And finally, the Washington Redskins on 106.7 WJFK and a 45-station network, North Carolina, Virginia, Delaware, Pennsylvania, and Maryland, West Virginia. And you're caught up as much as I can give you. Next time around, I'll give you some interesting Arbitron information. So, hope you enjoy the rest of the magazine. And, Fred, take her on. Bye-bye.
And now, a DX Audio Service editorial. Here is the chief editor of the DX Audio Service, Fred Vobey.
Perhaps it's I've matured after 48 years, or maybe I'm just a little less tolerant of people taking things away from me that I've been comfortable with. In any case, two things have really gotten me worked up of recent. Like many DXers, I've been listening with great interest to the IBOC test being done between WLW 700 and WOR 710. Little known are the tests between WCHB 1200 and WWJ 950 in Detroit. I really have mixed emotions on IBOC, and I have to ask if IBOC is right for right now. On the positive side, some, and I stress some, digital technologies have made life better for us. Although cranky with the change in the early 90s, I have to say that I prefer desktop audio editing over reel-to-reel tape recorders and editing with a razor blade and tape. IBOC, however, does not fall into the positive area like that, mainly due to the fact that it ruins what's already there. Unlike color television in the late 50s and early 60s, where a color signal would not degrade the black and white signal, the introduction of IBOC harms both the carrier that it's on, plus those to the side. Being curious about IBOC, when I was alerted to the unannounced tests of WCHB, I packed up my test gear and headed north. Being familiar with the area between Detroit and Toledo, I was able to find a quiet location to set up and monitor transmissions. My system consisted of a 2-foot loop, a Sony ICF 2010, GE Super Radio 3, Tektronix 2710 Spectrum Analyzer, and a Link CSM 1000 RF monitor. The first observation was made on the 1200 kHz carrier of WCHB. When IBOC was turned on, and yes, I could tell it without the test instrumentation, there was interference at both 1212 and 1188. IBOC emits a buzz-like sound on adjacent channels. The Sony 2010 was the best in bringing out the bad in IBOC. The synchronization feature, which is used to lock in weak carriers, would make the buzz very predominant. Had my batteries lasted in my Sony Minidisc recorder, I would have let you hear it, but trust me, the buzz is far worse than any overmodulation that you might hear. The carrier on 1188 was strong enough to cause some discomfort to WOWO's 1190 signal. Using the lower sideband of the sync feature would enable the buzz to be heard clearly. Using the top sideband would produce a mix of the buzz plus splatter from WCHB. In the National Radio Club's email list and in private emails to people that I trust as being professional in their observations, the IBOC transmissions, that is, the digital information, was heard farther than the analog component. For example, when WLW was running their tests of IBOC, some DXers on the West Coast could not hear WLW's analog transmission, but the buzz was traceable and audible. The only plus to this is that someone could have the satisfaction of knowing that WLW could be heard digitally on the West Coast. Yes, this is a positive, but at what cost? How about the interference to stations on 690 and 710? There was severe interference to stations on those frequencies, and like my experiences with interference on WOWO, it is not acceptable. In my opinion, in-band on-channel digital operation is not wise and should be abandoned. I'm all for the advancing of technology, but not at the expense of interference to analog stations that the public already uses. My personal recommendation is to take the digital platform to another band of frequencies where it could coexist without causing harm to others. As a side note to this issue, if you hear the IBOC buzz on a station, be sure to write a letter to that station's public file and send a copy to the Federal Communications Commission. Since some folks pushing forward IBOC are claiming there is no interference, despite evidence to the contrary, we need to protect what we have now. So much for IBOC. Yeah, I said that there were two things bugging me. The second is the antics of Opie and Anthony, a pair of boobs behind a microphone that outraged a lot of people. Let me read the news story of what happened. This is from the Associated Press, August 22nd, and is titled FCC to Investigate Alleged Sex in Cathedral. It reads, "The nation's top communications regulator ordered an investigation Thursday into complaints that a pair of New York radio shock jocks allegedly broadcast a live eyewitness account of a couple having sex in St. Patrick's Cathedral. A Virginia couple was arrested August 15th after allegedly having sex in a vestibule just a few feet from worshipers in the landmark Manhattan church. The encounter was described as it happened during the Opie and Anthony show, WNEW-FM's popular afternoon drive time program. Federal Communications Commission Chairman Michael Powell directed the agency's Enforcement Bureau to begin an investigation immediately," spokesman David Frisk said. "If the Federal Communications Commission finds that a station violated federal indecency laws, the penalty typically is a fine ranging from $5,000 to $30,000, Fisk said. "The amount can be higher depending on the case," he said. The broadcast was part of a regular feature on a program where couples can win prizes for having sex in risky places. The couple's attorney has said that they were just simulating sex. FCC Commissioner Michael Copps has said that he received hundreds of outraged emails and phone calls about the broadcast. He said that the agency should consider revoking the station's license. And that's the end of the Associated Press article. For those of you that want to hear the broadcast, you can go to a website called thesmokinggun.com. It has MP3 and real audio clips of the stunt. The direct URL is http://www.thesmokinggun, that's thesmokinggun.com/archive, all small letters, /OPIEANTHONY1, that's the number one, .html. It's interesting to follow on the various email lists the support or condemnation of Opie and Anthony. On one side, you have many people outraged that a radio station stunt promoted people having sex in a church in order to get points to win a contest. On the other side, you have people saying, "Aw, it's not that bad. Stern's done worse, and besides, it's freedom of speech." I think that the difference is that a sponsor, a station, and the hosts of the program promoted and then broadcast with great glee the act occurring in the church. This does not have anything to do with speech. And I think you could obviously argue that some lines have been crossed. Suppose I was a popular radio host and said to my listeners, "You get 20 points toward a contest if you defecate on someone's carpet in their home." Now suppose you came home and discovered that your carpet in your home was the target. Again, this has nothing to do with speech. It is no surprise that Opie and Anthony have huge ratings. Same applies to Howard Stern, Greaseman, and a number of others. And the sad fact is, the ratings translate to money, and a company like Infinity, while being publicly critical, is laughing all the way to the bank. Although the pair was fired and their show canceled, I doubt they'll be off the air very long. Sex and depraved acts on the radio sell, and when one businessman cancels his account, there is someone else right behind him to take his place in sponsorship. While more and more stations cut news and public affairs, yet they'll crow about how they're the leaders in the community on public service, incidents like this are becoming more and more frequent. Add to that technical violations, and it's getting harder and harder to believe that anyone in broadcasting has any morals, ethics, or commitment to public service. A while back, I was told by a politician that the reason government does not do anything about these broadcasters is because nobody cares. I guess that might be right, as names that I know in email lists that carp about events concerning radio never appear in any searches in public records or complaints. In other words, nobody is concerned enough to write the right people and complain. People only do wrong things when they have no fear of getting caught or punished. So I guess that not only will we see more outrageous stunts in the future, but we will also have the knowledge that we allowed them to do the stunts due to lack of action. Think about it the next time you hear something which is morally, ethically, or illegal on the radio. I'm Fred Wilby.
XAS. With better variety and less static.
Well, I just got off the phone just moments ago with Crazy Ken up at the Publication Center in upstate New York. And Ken's told me that the 23rd edition of the AM Radio Log is going to be out just after the convention. In fact, we're taking orders, and you can order yours right now if you wish, online at www.nrcdxas.org/catalog. And once you get into the catalog section, look for the AM radio link, and you can order using PayPal by credit card. The AM radio log is an annual edition. It contains over 320 pages in 8.5 by 11, three hole punch U.S. loose leaf format. Now, this publication fits nicely into a half inch three ring binder. Nearly 1,500 updates since last year's log. Now, this is the AM Radio Hobby's official radio station reference for U.S. and Canadian stations. Each station listing contains its location, frequency, call sign, format, network affiliation, station address, station slogan, day and night transmitter powers, and there's a cross-reference by city and call letter in the back of the book. Radio station listings from the United States and Canada include up to the last minute information on the news stations in the expanded band. And if you're a subscriber to the DX News or DX Audio service and you make changes in the AM log using Jerry Starr's AM switch, your log is never more than a month out of date. As it stands, the AM radio log is the most accurate, the most informative logbook on AM radio stations. So why mess around with free internet services that have tons of errors? Get the book, which gives you the good information. The AM Radio Log. Prices, U.S. member, $19.95. U.S. non-member, $25.95. Canadian member, $22.95. Canadian non-member, $27.95. And to Western Europe and the Pacific Rim, $27.95. Either log on to our website and get your AM log today, or just simply contact the Publication Center at Post Office Box 164, Mansville, New York, 13661 in the good old U.S. of A.
National Radio Club.
If you recall on a past edition of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service, I talked a little bit about DTV and ways to receive the signal. We suggested that you might want to look at something called a Hopog card for your computer, because there are not necessarily any receivers out there that are being sold to consumers. Well, the Federal Communications Commission is now getting into the act to make sure that consumers do have access to DTV signals. On August 8th, the Federal Communications Commission adopted a plan that will give consumers access to digital programming over television by requiring off-air digital TV tuners on nearly all new sets by 2007. By enacting a five-year rollout schedule that starts with larger, more expensive TV sets, the FCC is minimizing the cost for equipment manufacturers and consumers. This action marks another step in the FCC's progress toward making the digital TV transition a reality. The FCC said that DTV receivers are a necessary element of broadcast television service in the same way that analog TV receivers have been since the inception of analog television service. Although analog receivers are still dominant today, that will change as the transition to digital TV progresses. The Federal Communications Commission says that its jurisdiction is established by the 1962 All-Channel Receiver Act, which provides the FCC with the, quote, authority to require, unquote, that television sets be, quote, capable of adequately receiving all frequencies, unquote, allocated by the Federal Communications Commission for television broadcasting. The authority provided under the All-Channel Receiver Act applies to all devices used to receive broadcast television service, not just those used to receive analog signals. The Federal Communications Commission said that the plan reflects and accounts for the following. 1. Including DTV reception capability in all new television receivers that will require the redesign of product lines. 2. Prices are declining and will decline even faster as economies of scale are achieved and production efficiencies are realized over time. And 3. Prices of large TV sets have been declining at a rate of $100 to $800 per year, so that the additional cost of the DTV tuner may be partially or completely offset by the general price decline. The Federal Communications Commission said that this plan will ensure that new TV receivers include a DTV tuner on a schedule as close as economically feasible to the December 31, 2006 target completion date for the DTV transition that was set forth in the Communication Act by Congress. The second report and order and second memorandum opinion and order adopted on August the 8th requires that all television receivers with screen sizes greater than 13 inches and all television receiver equipment such as VCRs and DVDs will be required to include DTV reception capability after July 1, 2007, according to the following schedule. Receivers with screen sizes 36 inches and above, 50% of a responsible party's units, must include DTV tuners effective July 1, 2004. 100% of such units must include DTV tuners effective July 1, 2005. For receivers with a screen size 25 to 35 inches, 50% of all responsible parties to units must include DTV tuners effective July 1st, 2005. 100% of such units must include DTV tuners effective July 1st, 2006. For receivers with a screen size 13 to 24 inches, 100% of all such units must include DTV tuners effective July 1st, 2007. TV interface devices, VCRs and DVD recorders and players that receive broadcast television signals, 100% of all such units must include DTV tuners effective July 1st, 2007. In the item published August 8th, the Federal Communications Commission also declined, for the time being, to adopt labeling requirements for television receivers that are not able to receive any off-the-air broadcasts. The Federal Communications Commission stated that it is unclear when or if such products will become commercially available and how they will be marketed. The Federal Communications Commission will continue to monitor the state of the marketplace and to take additional steps, if necessary, to protect consumers' interests. The August 8th article also amends the FCC rules to reference the most recent version of the Advanced Television Systems Committee's, that is ATSC's, DTV standard. The Federal Communications Commission also stated that it will address the possible adoption of the ATSC's Program System and Information Protocol, PSIP, specification in its forthcoming second review of policies for the DTV transition. In the interim, the Federal Communications Commission included the PSIP specification in its rules as a document that licensees may consult for guidance. Finally, the action denies a petition for reconsideration requesting that the FCC consider imposing minimum performance thresholds for DTV receivers. In reaffirming its previous decision on the issue, the Federal Communications Commission said that competitive forces are the best approach to ensuring that DTV receivers perform adequately and meet the consumer needs in terms of price, quality, performance, and features. And that is from a FCC press release from August 8, 2002 on digital television. A while back, I was sent a page out of a magazine by a DX Audio Service member, which was extremely neat. This page was titled, An ECBS Alert, an Extremely Cool Broadcast System. And what it was is two pages, of vintage radio replicas of Crosley radios. And on the page, it features radios such as the 1936 Metro radio, the 1941 Streamliner, the 1946 True Tone radio, the 1952 Color radio, the 1930 Bluebird radio, the 1932 Cathedral radio, which is one that I think everyone is pretty much familiar with. And if you were at the 2000 National Radio Club Convention, you could have saw my replicas that I had, the 1936 Sleigh radio, and the limited edition 1941 Empire radio. Great looking radios, and they're surely a conversation piece. And on the back side, there was a replica of one of the old 1950s TVs, except this TV is color. But let's get back to the radio side here. This page apparently came out of some kind of catalog. And down at the bottom, it says visit www.wireless2.com and go to history/nostalgia, select broadcast system. Well, I went to the www.wireless2.com site, which is no longer there. It actually resolves now over to www.target.com, and up in the corner comes up a link to Marshall Fields. Well, I wanted to do some searching around and see if I can find something. So what I did is I looked for some radios, and up popped an interesting radio that I never knew about. I think all of us kind of know about the Bajan radio, which is the one where you can crank it up. You don't have to use batteries. I did not know that Grundig apparently makes a version of that radio. Now, whether or not it's made by Bajan, I'm not sure, but let me just read you what was on the page here and see if this is interesting to some of you. The product description is, or I should say, reads, "Don't be left in the dark. When the power goes out, just give this lightweight radio's handle a few turns, switch on the emergency light, and get back in touch with what's happening. Four-band tuning includes battery-free access to AM, FM, Shortwave 1, and Shortwave 2 stations. The built-in power generator also can take three AA batteries as an extra backup. Classic Grundig styling includes DC and earphone jacks. Available at MarshallFields.com and in the catalog. Not available in the Marshall Fields store. Unit measures 6 3/4 wide by 5 3/4 high by 2 inches deep. Weighs 2 pounds. Its catalog number is 206569. An ASIN number is B00006BZ8J. And it's titled the Grundig Emergency Hand Crank Radio. Their price is $39.95, and it usually ships in 1 to 2 days. If you know anything about this radio, you might want to let us know here at the DX Audio Service. Maybe you even have one. You can tell us what Shortwave 1 and Shortwave 2 bands are. I assume that's probably the tropical bands and then some of the higher frequency bands, say in the 6 megahertz and 9 megahertz area. But we'll wait until somebody actually can clue us in on what's going on. But I was amazed that Grundig did have a hand crank radio and found it kind of interesting. Again, if you have one of these radios or know a little bit more about it, why not let us know here at the DX Audio Service. Well, that music means it's time for us to get out of here for another 30 days. We hope you have a chance to stop in and visit us at the 2002 National Radio Club Convention, and we'll tell you a little bit more about what happened at the convention as well as where the next convention's going to be on our next edition. Hope you've enjoyed it, and again, thanks to the folks of TM Century for their help in our new theme package here on the DX Audio Service and WNRC. Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Wally, a whole bunch. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support radio.